You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today, I'm going to talk about the beginnings of the budget battles in Washington, D.C. Last week, we saw that the Republican Party passed a continuing resolution to keep the federal government open. So no matter what you've heard on the major networks, that's what they voted for, to keep the U.S. government open. Now, I have mixed feelings of that because I think a large percentage of the federal government, it's about time to shut it down because the United States is broke. But be that as that may, that's what the Republican in the House did. And the vote was 230 in favor of continuing, keeping the government open. Namely, they're not voting to shut it down. They're voting to keep it open, and they voted that way. And there were a total of 230 votes in favor of that, of which 228 were Republicans, and only two were Democrats. Now, on the other side, voting against keeping the government open was the Democratic Party. 188 Democrats voted against a continuing resolution not to keep the government open. So I think in terms of shutting it down, that sounds like the Democrats really are voting for shutting it down. It's not the Republicans. And remember, only one Republican out of the 189 votes were for shutting it down. Now, what am I not telling you? There's a catch, and there's a deliberate catch. What the Republican Party did is said we can continue having the federal government open, with one exception in terms of funding. We will not fund Obamacare. And the House was united on this. Remember a couple of weeks ago, months ago, the pundits in Washington, your news commentator, would say this would never happen. The Republican Party is divided. They'll never get enough votes to do this. And what we're talking about, what are they doing? They're defunding Obamacare. And a majority of Americans want that. Majority of Americans, first of all, want the federal government to remain open. And the majority of Americans want Obamacare to be repealed. That's the majority of Americans. And that's poll after poll after poll. Now, for those that are new listeners to my show, the way you listen to my show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com. And let me spell it for you. That's pronkpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, you will have links to the shows. Now, I'm a little bit behind in the postings. I still haven't caught up. And there are reasons for that. I promise to do better, but I only have access to the software on Richland campus. I don't have a computer at home. I use the computers either in the Dell Rio Lab, which really does not have any software that I can use to edit it. So I very much have to edit it either in the student media department, which is the Richland Chronicle, the KDUX Web Radio, and the Chronicle Television. They, on their computers, they do have editing. We use Adobe Edition, but it's an old version. So I try to edit all the shows in the multimedia department that has the latest edition of Edition. In the past, in terms of Del Rio, if that wasn't available, I could download a free copy of Audacity. They no longer let me do that. So I really, the only time I can edit the shows, and that's why I'm behind, I would love to be able on a Sunday to catch up, but I simply don't have any access to this. I definitely don't have it at home, and I don't have it in Del Rio. So it's really Monday through Fridays and Saturday afternoons that I really have time to edit the show. And usually for every hour show, it takes me 2 hours, sometimes 3 hours. It depends on the quality of the broadcast. I try to edit out the music, but I also try to edit out some of the dead space to make sure it's short as possible. But I wanted to alert the new listeners, most of my listeners, I would say 99.9999% listen to this show, the podcast, or streaming over the internet. And the way to get that is to go to my companion blog, where not only do I will have at the very top links to my radio shows. At the very top, you have usually the most current 8 to 10, sometimes 12 shows. Underneath that, you have a complete archive of all my shows with the exception of the very first one. We've kind of lost the very first one, but that was kind of my first time. So I point that out because most students really, if you think about it, between 4 and 5 on weekdays, most of them either in class or finish with classes have gone home, and in the evening students, many of them who work, usually arrive after 5. So I really have, when I'm actually broadcasting the program, which I'm doing right now, I have very, very few listeners because most of my listeners listen to it via podcast, and I post those podcasts religiously, and that gives you the freedom to download it and listen to my show whenever it's convenient to you, and that's what most people do. Or you can stream it. You can listen to it over the internet. I use Podomatic for the host for that, but the actual links to get there are on my prompops.wordpress.com blog. Now, the reason why I mention that is I have a lot of information I provide for all my shows. I probably will only have one segment for today's show, and that will be on the budget battles beginning. And that's what happened last week. Do I think is going to happen? Both the House and the Senate will eventually pass a continuing resolution, and that will keep the government operating. Now, you might think that's a terrific result. I think it's an atrocious result. Because let me tell you what is neither party is telling you. And they need to be honest with you, but this is something they're really hiding. Neither the Republicans or Democrats want to talk about this. And I said this on the last show. Through August, the deficit, in other words, if you add up everything the government has spent for this fiscal year, and remember, the fiscal year started for fiscal year 2013, the fiscal year started October 1, 2012, and it ends September 30th, 2013. The majority of the fiscal year 2013 budget is this year, you know, the last 9 months of it. Well, the deficit through August, and this is from the September monthly Treasury statement that the Department of Treasury comes out, the deficit is $755 billion. $755 billion. In other words, they've spent more than they've collected in taxes. Now, I'm expecting the final number around the 10th of October. Technically, legally, they have it's on the 8th business day. Now, I expect it on the 10th, if you add the number of days that we'll probably have it. However, because this is a report that gets a lot of attention, many times they're late in getting this out. So it wouldn't surprise me that we don't have the numbers by October 10th. It might be a little bit later. It probably, what I really think is going to happen, we're not going to have the numbers on the deficit until mid-October at the really earliest, and it might be longer than that. And I think the deficit on the low side could be around $700 billion. On the high side, it could be a little over $900 billion. That's the range I'm expecting. So we're already at $755 billion. Now, what's going to determine whether it grows or slightly declines is what are the total tax revenues coming in September and how much money the government has spent. Now, many people would say that's actually an improvement because we've had 4 years of deficits of over $1 trillion. This would be the first, are you excited? This would be the first fiscal year budget where we these are actual numbers now, we're actually under $1 trillion. Isn't that wonderful that the trend is where we have a lower deficit? No, it's not wonderful because we're nowhere near balancing the budget. And last week I went over the Federal Reserve's policy of continuing to buy Treasury notes, bills, and bonds, as well as mortgage-backed securities from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, to the tune of $85 billion a month for a total of over $1 trillion. Now, most of the focus was, well, was the Fed going to taper or was it not going to taper? I firmly believe the Federal Reserve has no exit strategy. Why do they say that? Their own words are, we're not going to lower the amount of bonds we have until the expected unemployment rate falls below 6.5%. Ladies and gentlemen, that will not happen in at least the next 2 years. And the reason why I say that is the only reason the unemployment rate has been going down is because more and more people are leaving the labor force. It's not that they want to leave the labor force, far from it. We're talking millions of people have left the labor force. And you see that reflected in the labor participation rate. I might be a little off, but I believe it's 63.5%. It should be somewhere between 66% and 67%. That is the normal range. Now, it is varied over history. It's been as low as 58% if we go back to when they started collecting these statistics. But what happened over the decades, more and more women entered the labor force. And as more and more, instead of staying home as housewives, raising the kids, they entered the labor force. And as a result, the labor force participation rate over the last 60 years has gone up, up, and up to where in the 2000, from about 2000 onwards, the number is going to fluctuate monthly, but the normal range was in between 66 and 67%. And that's truly what we should see, because what's going to happen is if we ever truly have a recovery, and I think we're about 7 years from a recovery, folks, but if we do truly have a recovery, and that might be optimistic, by the way, all these discouraged workers are going to be rushing back into the labor force because they need a job, whether it's a part-time job or a full-time job. And when that happens, then the unemployment rate, the government's official unemployment rate, the so-called U3 rate, will go up. It'll clearly go above 9%. It might even hit 10%. And most of that will be the discouraged workers, the people that have left the labor force, rushing back to find a job. We're nowhere close to that. The trend is over the last several years as more and more people have left the labor force. And you see that reflected in lower and lower and lower civilian labor participation rates. And that's just the facts. And the economists at the Federal Reserve, including Chairman Ben Bernanke, and most likely the next Federal Reserve Chairman, Janet Yellen, they all know this. I'm not pointing out something that they know. The economy is very, very weak. This is the worst recovery, if you want to call it that, post-World War II recovery. As a matter of fact, the only worse situation is the Great Depression. And if I'm right that the economy is slowly stagnating into another recession, once that happens, you're going to see higher and higher unemployment rates. Forget about the discouraged workers rushing back. You're going to see more and more layoffs. And I think that's just around the corner. I'm not good at predicting exactly when that's going to happen, But we're at we have an economy that's growing really at less than 2%, when the historical trend is around a little over 3%. We're way below the historical average, and the reason why that's important, you need to be growing somewhere between 3 to 4% to truly reduce the unemployment rate. So all the Federal Reserve is doing, and this is the story that really is not emphasized, only a very few really astute people that know what's going on will tell you this. What the Federal Reserve is doing by buying bonds, it is financing these large and continually large deficits of the federal government. It's like increasing the credit line on your credit card. That's what's happening. And you can't continue to do this and do this and do this. Why? Eventually, the people that are loaning you the money want much higher interest rates, because they will believe, and I think rightly, that the United States may not be able to pay off the national debt. Or if they try to pay it off, the purchasing power of those dollars, whether it's for the interest or the principal, will be worth much less than the people that originally lent it. So what happens then is the people that are truly buying Treasury securities, and that's mainly large financial institutions and very wealthy people that use this as really a parking place for their money in times of uncertainty, and it's a world market, and it's a very large market, they will be insisting on higher risk premiums, which means that the interest rates dramatically have to increase. All the Federal Reserve is doing is financing the continuing deficits of the federal government. And yes, they're going down a little bit, but the economy truly has not recovered. We are still below the peak level of employment that was in November of 2007. That's 6 years ago. We're not even there. We're about a little over 2 million jobs short. And from that point to now, every month you had about 140,000 to 150,000 new entrants into the labor force. And what you see is that's the reason your high school and college graduates, as well as dropouts, simply cannot find jobs. And to the extent they can, it's usually part-time jobs where you don't truly need a college education, or for that matter, a high school education, and it's way below their expectations. And especially if they've gone to college, they're saddled with large debt that they simply cannot pay off, because they thought they were going to get a job, a good full-time permanent job that required a college education. Now if they're lucky, they get part-time jobs, and that's at the best of situations. Because the black unemployment rate, for example, amongst teenagers is between 40 and 50%. And amongst all blacks, it's, for example, around 13%. Much higher than the 7.3% that the official rate is. And that's very, very misleading, because if you factored in, what if we were at a labor participation rate of somewhere between 66 and 67%, then the U3 rate would be somewhere between 9 and 10%. It's very, very misleading, because the only reason really that the unemployment rate has been going down at all is the fact that people have been leaving the labor force. Now, that was somewhat of a digression, but I want to tell you what the big problem is and what you're not hearing and why I'm still upset. I have a bunch of cartoons at the very top of this segment that I will be including in my notes. There's an excellent series of charts published by the Heritage Foundation, and I believe these are preliminary charts for fiscal year 2013, because I was reading the article, and I really, even though this was published in August, which is about a month ago, their numbers are a little off, and they were estimating a deficit of somewhere about $650, $55 billion. Well, like I said, through the September report, in other words, through August, the deficit was at $755 billion, which is over $100 billion. So their numbers are going to be a little off, but that's a detail, because we will know sometime in October, hopefully by the middle of October, if not sooner. Department says that on the eighth business day in October, we'll publish this monthly Treasury statement. So that would be, I believe, the 10th of October. So we should know on what's called Double 10 Day, October 10th, what the actual deficit is for fiscal year 2013, which ends the end of the month. Okay, that's the setup. But here's the big picture, and I sort of, in round numbers, gave it to you last time, and I'm relying on the Heritage Foundation numbers, and I'm trying to keep the number of numbers I'm giving you to the minimum. And I want to focus in on what I think you would get a general consensus of what government programs that people would support continuing. First of all, and I'm dealing with 100% of the budget. I'm going to do 100% of the budget and say, okay, what are the major components? Approximately 45% are what's called major entitlement programs. Now, what are the major entitlement programs? The first and by far the biggest is Social Security. That makes up approximately 22%. The three other programs that make up 23% are Medicare, Medicaid, and other health care expenses. And of that 23%, about 13% is just for Medicare. Another way to look at it, especially if you're on Social Security or Medicare, in round numbers, about 35% of the total budget of the United States pays for Social Security and Medicare. Promises were made to you. Remember, both programs are a pay-as-you-go program. So people working today are paying the benefits that people, for example, to fully qualify for benefits for Medicare, for Medicare, you have to be 65. For Social Security, while you can retire early, start earlier than 65, if you wait to 65 and get full benefits, and most people do that. Some retire early, some wait, continue to work, and retire after 65 and get a little bit more. But 22% is for Social Security, 13% is for Medicare, and that's 35% of the budget. That's more than a third. And then if you add Medicaid and other health insurance, you're at a grand total of 23%. At 23% and 22%, you get a total for major entitlements of 45%. Now, the reason why I'm emphasizing this, if you ask people, okay, what program should the federal government definitely pay for, they will say Social Security, Medicare. Now, if they're poor, they will say Medicaid, and there's some other minor health insurance programs. But the point is, all those programs, the most popular programs, very difficult to cut, in total make up 45% of the budget. Now, if you ask Americans, okay, that takes care of the major benefits, what else? Well, I'm all for defense. You know, we need an Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard to defend the country. See, in the past, and I mean this, you know, 40, 50 years ago, defense used to be upwards of 40 to 50% of the budget. In other words, if you looked at the entire budget, it would be in the 40 to 50% range. I'm talking in the 50s and 60s. No longer. Today, national defense, in terms of and these are for people that are on active duty. I'm not talking veterans benefits at all or retirement. National defense is 19%. In addition to that, most people would say, because remember, we're paying for these deficits by borrowed money. Well, you better pay the interest, because if you don't pay the interest on the national debt, guess what? People will stop lending. So we better pay the interest and principal on it. Well, the interest today is 6%. You add 19% for national defense, 6% for net interest, that's 25%. Add that 25% to entitlements, you're right at 70%. You're right at 70%. And that's what you get for 70% of the budget. You get Social Security checks going out. You get benefits for Medicare, Medicaid, and other health insurance programs. You get a national defense, your Army, Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, and you pay the interest. Now, what's the problem here? What about the rest? Have I mentioned any other departments? No, I have not. Nor have I mentioned veterans benefits, nor welfare programs, income security programs. And those are income security and veterans benefits. That's another 19%. That's a big chunk. Okay, what am I leading up to? We've run deficits of over $1 trillion ever since Obama has been in office. Now, keep in mind, the House of Representatives and the Senate, as a result of the elections in November 2006, the Democrats controlled both the House and the Senate starting in 2007. So for 2007, 8, 9, and 10, the House and Senate were controlled by the Democratic Party. And obviously, starting in January of 2009, we have a Democratic president. And what the first thing they did, once they had a lock on that, is they went on a spending binge. That's the way to describe it. Remember that over $900 billion stimulus package? Well, in addition to that, they increased the budgets of every department significantly. So what was the result? We had massive deficits. $1.4 trillion, $1.3 trillion, slightly less than $1.3 trillion, slightly less than $1.1 trillion. And in this year, it looks like it's going to be somewhere between $700 billion and $900 billion. And because of that, every fiscal year, we're running these massive deficits, and they're financed by the issuance of new debt. You got to pay your bills. The government has to pay its bills. And the only way it can pay its bills when it's spending at such high levels, way in excess of tax revenues. We're talking for most of the years, the average has been over $1 trillion. Over $1 trillion. And it could be conceivably be $1 trillion for 2013. I'm not really expecting that. But I would not be surprised at all if the deficit for 2013 was either slightly below or slightly above $900 billion. And all that would require is that in September, a $150 billion deficit was run just for that month. Who knows? You know, it's very, very difficult to estimate tax revenues. But where you have an economy that's stagnating, and that's what we have, a poor recovery. We're below the historical trend line of 3%. And usually when that's the situation, that means fewer and fewer people are working, which means you're getting less tax revenues, both from individuals and corporations. Now, I will say, yeah, it's been an improvement. Definitely. When you're under $1 trillion, you're making progress. But until President Obama was elected, we never had a deficit approaching that, not even half $1 trillion. Under President Bush's last year, when the Democratic Party controlled both the House and the Senate, the total deficit was approximately $459 billion, less than a half $1 trillion. And that was, at that time, that was the biggest deficit in the entire U.S. history. And the Democrats, this is terrible. This is outrageous. Look, he's not fiscally responsible. Well, you can about double that in terms of President Obama, because he's not fiscally responsible either. But for that matter, neither is the Republican Party. What are they afraid of? That you finally wake up. We're playing this kabuki theater on the budget. But neither party is telling you we need to balance the budget. They're not even coming close. All they're doing is passing continuing resolution after continuing resolution after continuing resolution. What does that mean? Yes, we have spending at a very high level. We will continue it at that high level. We won't increase it. We won't decrease it. We'll just, it's sort of like flatlining it. That's somewhat of a simplification, but we're going to continue it at the levels that it's at. Why? Well, the Republicans, remember, all money bills, tax bills as well as spending bills, must originate in the House of Representatives. And because they need to continue to keep the federal government open, the compromise is, like the Democrats, they would like to actually increase federal spending more. And what the Republicans would like to do is actually decrease spending. But because neither party, one party controls the House, the other controls the Senate, the compromise position, no one likes it. Republicans don't like it, neither do Democrats, is we'll keep it at the level it is now. We'll continue spending at existing levels. That's the big compromise. What's wrong with that? That means we continue to have these massive deficits, which are projected to go back by the Heritage Foundation study to go back over $1 trillion starting in 2022, which is not far away, folks. A little over 8 years, 9 years. So why there is a short-range trend for lower deficits, which is great, they're nowhere near balancing the budget, nor are they really cutting the national debt. It will be over $17 trillion, the gross debt. I don't want to get into gross versus net, but the number you'll be hearing is the gross outstanding debt of the United States is over $17 trillion. And if you started at 2000, when 2001, where Bush took over and through Obama, we've added nearly $12 trillion to the national debt. And I was listening to a radio show. I actually listened to several. And I'm not going to embarrass the person who was saying this. But this is a common mistake, and I want to emphasize that. He was confusing, and he did it more than once. Occasionally, I misspeak. So when he did it the first time, my ears prop, you know, and this was a Saturday show about cars. And I'm not going to mention the man's name. You could probably figure it out. One of my favorite shows to the extent I listen to him, mainly because he has good historical stories. Anyway. He kept on confusing the deficit with the debt. And the best way to, first of all, a deficit is where the federal government, in this case, spends more money. It's out what's called outlays. It's spending outlays exceed are greater than the total tax revenue or tax collections. In other words, outlays or spending exceeds total tax collections. When that happens, you have a deficit. And usually it will vary from month to month to month. Most months it will be a deficit. Occasionally more tax revenues come in than was expected, and you might have a small surplus. But what I'm really talking about here is the entire fiscal year, which will be over in a few days. In a week, a little over a week in about 6 hours, will be the start of October 1, the start of the new fiscal year. And to continue the funding of the government, federal government, that Republicans voted to keep the government open, fund the government through a continuing resolution, that really doesn't balance. You see, that's the dirty thing. That's what they're really hiding from you. They're nowhere near balancing the budget. When this fiscal year, through August, the deficit was running a rate of $755 billion. And I have a nagging suspicion that some of these numbers have been manipulated at, and that's why typically it's most of the reports are out the eighth business day. The monthly Treasury statement from the Department of Treasury is released. The 1 month, usually it's late, sometimes by a couple of days, sometimes by a week or more, is when you have the end of a fiscal year, which is September 30th, and then it's a little bit late. So we really won't know the actual deficit where spending outlays have exceed total tax revenue collections until sometime in October, mid to late October. And I would not be surprised it'll be around $900 billion. That's better than a trillion, but my gut tells me $900 billion might be the number. I don't know. I have no inside information. Now, they want to keep that number below a trillion to say, listen, the trend has been downwards. We've now got it below $1 trillion. Now, I'm not clapping for that. I want the budget to be balanced. And we're somewhere between $700 billion to $1,000 billion of deficit spending. We've spent more than we collected. The term is spending beyond the means of the American people. That's exactly what the federal government has been doing as approved by Congress, both the House and the Senate. So we can get really distracted as to what the Republicans did and what the tactics are going to be in the Senate. I'll get into that just a little. But the big picture and what you got to keep in mind, what they're not telling you is, again, for the sixth year, if you count the last fiscal year that President Bush in, we've run these massively huge deficits. And the only way we can pay for those deficits is borrow money. That's why the national debt is the accumulation of those deficits, where we have to borrow to pay for them. And that's what the Federal Reserve, your central bank of the United States, has been doing with the so-called quantitative easing. And they're playing a game, too. You know, let me back up. Congress and the president, both the president, the Democratic-controlled Senate, as well as the Republican-controlled House, you know, they're pointing fingers at each other. Boehner said something. Listen, we voted to keep the government open. In other words, we voted for a continuing resolution that would keep the government open. However, we voted no funds included in that, or an amendment to it, no funds for Obamacare. Well, you and I know, and every American knows, that's Obama's big achievement. I think it's a total disaster and train wreck. Because what its employment impacts have been, people are not your business owners, the private sector, where wealth, income, and jobs are created, mainly by small new businesses, are simply not hiring. Everything is on hold. Why? One is we keep running these massive deficits year in, year out, leading directly to higher and higher, a growing national debt, and that's an overhang. And the reason why I consider that immoral is that is burdening future generations, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. That's what they're doing. They're spending money that way above the means of the American people. They're burdening future generations. It's not fiscally responsible. It's immoral. Shame on both political parties for doing this. And shame for not trying to lead our government out of this mess. We have a representative republic. We vote for congressmen and senators, our representatives and senators, to show leadership, to make the difficult decisions. Now, if you've listened to the show, I've on more than one occasion say there's no magic bullet. Because you might be asking, well, Ray, what would you do about it? First of all, you need to shut down at least 8 departments, at least 8. I think you could cut. When I mean shut down, I'm not talking about a temporarily shutting down. I'm talking about closing permanently 8 federal departments. And I probably won't get all 8, but let me just give you the biggies. Department of Transportation. Why do we need a Department of Transportation? Aren't you perfectly capable of buying a car or a bicycle or whatever means of transportation you use? I know the United States private sector is perfectly capable of supplying you with the vehicles that you need for transportation. I can go buy a car, lease a car. If I want to ride a bicycle, I can buy a bicycle. And also, a lot of the money goes to highways. Well, excuse me, we have state and county governments that really should address that need. We really don't need a federal department. States, and we have 50 of them the last time I checked, it's primarily their highway departments that actually build the highways. Now, I know there's a national interstate highway system. That's not my point. We don't need these big bureaucracies where American people are perfectly capable of producing vehicles as well as building highways, as well as using those highways and streets and buying the vehicles. Okay, that's one. I'm going to quickly go through the others. We don't need a Department of Housing. Americans are perfectly capable of building houses and apartments that people can either buy or rent. Get rid of it. In other words, close down the Department of Transportation, close down the Department of Housing. The same goes for the Department of Education. Most education is done by the individual locally. Most of your so-called public schools that are really government schools, as well as public colleges, which are really government colleges, are local and funded primarily by local government. We don't need a Department of Education. That's 3. The Department of Energy. Again, throughout our history, the United States' long history has found different fuels, first for lighting and then for powering vehicles. We don't need a Department of Energy. We have oil companies, coal companies, you name it, that are perfectly capable of producing the energy that the United States needs. As a matter of fact, we're going under what I would call a revolution there with the massive discoveries of natural gas as well as petroleum or oil. And if the federal government would just get out of the way and let private industry companies in the oil exploration and production and distribution, get out of the way and let them drill on federal lands. See, most of the additional reserves are on private lands where you don't need a license or a permit from the federal government. So if the federal government would get out of the way, we could even have more energy where we become an exporter. Well, that's truly what we need to grow the economy. That's a great kickstart. And it's starting slowly but surely to do that. But again, we don't need the federal government involved with the Department of Energy. Now, I'm looking at the clock. I'm not going to have time to go through all of them. But we don't need a Department of Agriculture. We're perfectly capable of eating and buying food. We're obviously perfectly capable of growing food. And remember, at one time, the United States was primarily an agricultural society. About 90% of the people worked in agriculture. Today it's under 3%. It's right around 2%. So we have a very productive agricultural sector. We don't need subsidies, nor do we need a Department of Agriculture. Private industry, private farms, many of them large, many of them small, are perfectly capable of earning profits and feeding the American people as well as many, many millions abroad. So get rid of the Department of Agriculture, Department of Labor. Most people are not members of unions today. Really, the only growth sector for unions is government. If you look at private sector unions, it's down to under 7% of the labor force. The only area where you've had any increase of union membership is in the government. And if you're going to shut down 8 to 10 departments, you're going to have less unions, union members anyway. And see, I'm a big if people want to organize and form a union, fine. Take the votes. If you can convince the employees of business to do that, fine. Most Americans don't want any part of that, do not want any part of it. And that's why union membership peaked back in the early 1950s and has gone down, 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 and down. Americans are perfectly capable of going out and finding a job, and if they don't like the job, they don't like what they're being paid, or they don't like the benefits or retirement plans, guess what? You can walk out the door and find another job where it's better. And that's the general preference of all Americans. Now, if a union can organize and convince more than 50% of an employer's employees to unionize, try it. In many, many companies, the employees are the biggest roadblock for unions to get representations because the employees want no part of it because they know they'll be paying dues to the union, and many of them simply are corrupt. The only part of unionization that has grown in the United States is government, as government has grown bigger and bigger and bigger. And what I'm recommending, you downsize the government and close 8 departments. Now, I'm not going to, there are several others, but I think you get the idea. But that's just the start. In other words, you have to permanently close down, give pink slips to everybody there. In other words, the people that have qualified retirements, they can retire. The other people that are remaining are going to have to find a job in the private sector. But we can no longer afford these bureaucracies where we have hundreds of thousands of people. It adds up. I think the last time I looked, the total federal labor force, excluding military, was around 2 million. But we need to cut that in half, and we need to do it by permanently closing 8 to 10 departments. Now, that's just the start. And that's not going to give you much. It'll give you some. Remember, there's no silver bullet. What else needs to be done? Now, this is not popular. For all the remaining federal departments that will continue, National Defense, the Treasury, the Department of State, Department of Justice, I'm probably missing one that I would still keep. But anyway, they need to be cut too, at least 25%, if not more. And that means drastic cuts in National Defense. And the National Defense budget, in terms of the total budget of the federal government, yes, it's gone down, 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 and down, but we simply cannot afford being empires builders in terms of being policemen of the world, trying to build democracies in country after country after country. What dramatically increases the size of the government is the federal government going to war, primarily in the Middle East and other countries. That war, having armed forces to support an empire like that, where we're constantly intervening in other countries, we can't mind our business abroad either, and it's primarily the Middle East, has to stop. We need to bring all the troops home, and then we have to close most, if not all, of our military bases abroad. Is this being seriously discussed or broached? No. But that's what needs to be done if you have to cut National Defense, as well as the other departments I mentioned, by about 25%, if not more. That's not going to be popular because the military-industrial complex, where you have many of your large defense contractors, they're going to lobby against that. In other words, to get business, they want wars. They want wars. And that's why they're always big advocates for intervention. And that's why they have their Senator McCain and Senator Lindsey Graham, as well as other senators, beating the war drums. There's not a war that they don't like. That's good for the defense contractor's business. The problem is the United States is broke. Where we've been running year after year, whether it's a Republican administration or a Democratic administration, we're running these massive deficits. So every department, two things need to happen. Either the department is eliminated in its entirety, or if it stays, such as I still think we need a Department of Defense, I still think we need a Department of Justice, I still think we need a Department of Treasury, I still believe we need a Department of State. And with maybe one or two others, that's it, folks. All the rest are shut down, and these departments that remain need to be cut by at least 25%, if not more. Not many senators or representatives are saying that, but that needs to be done. And if it's not done in a timely and orderly manner, what's going to happen? At some future date, not in the distant future, the debt time bomb is going to go off. And when that happens, and it'll be over a period of years, what you're going to see is interest rates that the Treasury Department has to pay for borrowers or people, or excuse me, for investors that want to invest in Treasury securities. And remember, it could be short-term Treasury bills, notes, or bonds, or mortgage-backed securities to fund Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And I'll just say one thing while I'm on that. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac should be eliminated. Those functions can be done in the private sector. That is one, and they're partly responsible for this poor recovery. They fueled the housing boom, where you had excessive investment in the housing sector that eventually blew up. So private mortgages are strictly should not be the function of the federal government, because they've had massive bailouts. Privatize it. That's what I'm saying. Privatize it. We have financial institutions in the financial services industry that will buy those companies or portions of them and compete. I'm all for competition. Do away with these government enterprises, government-sponsored GSEs, government-sponsored enterprises. Privatize it. Sell it off, assuming you could find someone to buy it. There are people that will buy the assets. They're not going to pay full price. But that what needs to be done, and then the government needs to stay out of it. It should not be one of the functions of the federal government. Okay, that's going to give you a little help. Not much, but that's a start. Nobody is talking about doing this, though. I'm not naive. You want to cut the Department of Education? You want to close down the department? Are you out of your mind? No, I'm not out of my mind. I'm just looking at the numbers and trying to tell you there is a day of reckoning that's going to happen. And then you're not going to have an option. You're going to have to close it, because guess what? You don't have the money to pay for the salaries of the people working there or any of your programs, because people will not be loaning you money. And to the extent you can find some that do, they're going to want significantly higher interest rates. And see, when that time bomb goes off, and it's like a rolling wave, like a shock wave, and it's going to be over several years. But what's going to happen is the interest rates will be going up, 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 and up. And what does that mean? The percentage of the budget now, net interest, is about 6%. It'll go to 7%, 10%, 15%, 20%, 25%. And what does that mean? Every other program is going to be squeezed out. And then, at that point, what's going to happen? Our followers, not our leaders, our followers in the House of Representatives and the Senate are going to have no choice but to go to the American people and say, we're shutting down the Department of Transportation. We're shutting down the Department of Energy. We're shutting down the Department of Agriculture. We're shutting down Department of Housing. And they're going to go down the list, and they're going to say, sorry, folks, we don't have the money. Because if we don't pay our interest on these securities that the Department of Treasury has issued, and they're much higher, then we can't continue with this government. Because that's been paying the bills. It's the Fed financing the federal government by printing or creating what I call digital electronic money at a keyboard. What they do is they give the, it's indirect, but in essence, the Treasury issues the securities, it gets from the Federal Reserve notes, Federal Reserve notes. All they're doing is printing it up, and actually, they actually don't print it. They make entries in a database at a keyboard. And then what does the Department of Treasury do? It pays the bills for all the rest of the government. And let's say that I'm a government contractor. They want to buy some aircraft. They owe me millions of dollars for it. They give me the note, and I take it to my bank. And what does the bank do? It deposits it at the Fed because the Fed creates the money. Some people have called this counterfeiting. The jargon they use today is quantitative easing. That's what the Federal Reserve is doing, which is a central bank. They're creating money, which expands the credit. But how does that affect you and me? Very simple. The money in your wallet is worth less, less, and less. In other words, your purchasing power goes down, down, and down. And that's what's going to eventually happen. Inflation is going to roar back. Inflationary expectations are going to go up, up, and up. And once you get in that cycle, and we have had this experience in the 70s and in the 80s, people are trying to, as quick as they can, spend their money because they know, they realize their money is worth less, less, and less. So inflation comes roaring back, interest rates become double digit, and at that point, the federal government will be downsized. Now, it's not just going to be those eight departments. What also has to be cut are the major entitlement programs, the most popular programs. I'm not a fan of any of them because it's smoke and mirrors time. They promised you a lot. They can't deliver it. Before I get into that, that means Social Security has to be cut. It'll be means tested. And if you've done the right thing and saved your money and you have means other than Social Security, your Social Security benefits will be cut. That's one way that they will deal with the problem. The other way, they will increase significantly payroll taxes to pay for Social Security and Medicare. So it's a double whammy. For those on Social Security, you will find that your Social Security benefits as well as Medicare benefits are going to be cut. And there are different ways to cut them. And I'll hold that for a little bit later in the show or maybe even tomorrow because you might be surprised how they're going to be doing it. So Social Security will be in all the entitlement programs, whether Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, drugs, Part D, as well as Obamacare, assuming it survives. I think ultimately Obamacare is not going to survive. For the simple reason we're having more and more people being permanently unemployed. It's hitting the young. It's hitting everybody. But it's severely hitting young people, students in college and high schools, that they graduate and can't find jobs. It is also hitting people in their 50s and 60s that want to work. They thought they would be working at their peak years and finding they're either without a job or the best they can find is a much lower paid part-time job. So this out-of-control government spending, what I call spending addiction order, sad, and it is truly sad, where you have massive deficits year in and year out, both under Republicans and in Democrats. And let me just say this. I'm not a Republican or Democrat. I'm a classical liberal or libertarian. I believe in a representative republic, and I believe in limited government on the federal level. I'm a big advocate of the United States Constitution. The federal government should not be over 20% in terms of its share of the real GDP. It should be closer to 10%. And remember, for most of the history of the United States, up to World War II, the federal government, the size of the federal government related to real GDP was under 3%. It was only starting in the administration of FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that it started to go up, but the big increase was as a result of World War II. But we've had a I always tell people, wars lead to bigger government and lead to debt. It gets ratcheted up, up, and up, and it's very difficult, if not impossible, to get it down below where it was. We're not going to have any choice. We need to downsize the federal government, not only by eliminating and closing departments permanently, we're going to have to dramatically cut entitlement programs. Now, this is one area neither Democrats or Republicans want to go near, the so-called third rail of politics. You want to cut my Social Security? You want to cut my Medicare? You're going to cut Medicaid? Are you out of your mind? The people will revolt. Guess what? Those programs have massive deficits today, and it's going to get worse, worse, and worse. You either cut the entitlements, increase the taxes, and that needs to be done. If you truly want to save Social Security, and you truly want to save Medicare, and you truly want to save Medicaid, that's what you need to do now. The earlier the better. Not have a new, brand new entitlement program called Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, where millions of Americans are finding, you know, the promise was you get to keep your doctor, you get to keep your plan, and your premiums will go down. Lie, lie, and big lie. No, you won't be able to keep your plan. No, most likely you will not be able to keep your doctor, and you're definitely, your premiums won't go down, they will go up. A study published by Forbes indicates that over the next 10 years, a family of four every year will pay roughly, on average, about $750 more a year. It starts off a little low, it goes up and goes down, but the average over 10 years, you will pay approximately $7,500. So you divide by 10, the average is right around $750. I didn't say, what did Obama say? Oh, you pass this plan and your premiums will go down. Not true. You'll be able to keep your own plan. Absolutely not true. Because all of your existing plans are in the process, if they haven't been already, of being terminated. Anyone that's on an individual plan or a group plan has gotten that letter. As of a certain date, you will not have this plan. We do have other plans that you might want to consider buying. And what people are finding, to get comparable coverage that they had in their existing plan, they have to spend significantly more money. Now, yes, they can get a cheaper plan. But your finding is you have a very narrow selection of both hospitals and doctor networks that you can go to. And they're not close by. That's what your major insurance companies are doing. That's not me saying this. This is an article that appeared in the New York Times today. And that's across the country. That's the games that were being played. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, the American people were sold a bill of goods. The so-called Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act does none of the above. Does none of the above. You will not be in the same plan. You most likely will not have the same doctor. And if you want the same benefits that your existing plan has, you're going to have to pay significantly more money every month. And I've heard that people are calling in because they're starting to get the letters. If they still have insurance from their employer, what many employers are doing is telling people, I can't afford what I've been giving you anymore. It's significantly higher. Either we're going to do away with our plan and basically say, you're on your own, go to the exchanges. And then when you go to the exchanges, what you're going to find is, yeah, you can buy a plan and you might save some money, but guess what? You're going to be in a network where you can't keep your doctor, you can't go to the hospital that's near you, and these are not the best networks to be in. And as a result, you're getting less benefits. You see, that's the game that's being played. Yeah, you'll have health insurance, but you don't have the plan you have now. In other words, it's significantly less coverage. That's why the price is lower, because guess what? They have these different metal plans, you know, bronze, silver, gold, platinum. I call it metallic health insurance. So, yeah, if you're employed and have the money, you can get a good plan. Going to cost you a lot more money. And then to really, and this is something the unions are complaining about, because what to the extent that you still have unions in the United States, over the years, they have negotiated hard is for good health insurance plans, both when they're employed as well as when they're retired. Those plans are being hit what's called a Cadillac tax. So if you work, let's say, and I have worked for some of these companies, I've worked for a number of companies. Some have very, very good coverage. Some have the best coverage out there with the most reputable companies. No one complains because the business said, we want our employees not to worry about their medical bills. And that's the way they attract, and they do attract people to their company, both small, medium, and large. Now, that tends to be the exception, but that's when the employer does the right thing and truly cares about his people. And as a result, what happens? People work for that company for as long as they can. They might sacrifice, they might be able to get a job someplace else at a higher salary, but they really stay with the company for the simple reason they have an excellent plan from their employer. Well, those plans, whether the union got it or whether a private enterprise, a business, or a charity, you name it, whoever decides to get these top-notch plans, they're hit with a tax. And I say to the government, how dare you? Here are individual employers, as well as union, looking out for the interests of their members, as well as their employees. And you come along and you want to tax them, a so-called Cadillac tax, because you got a more expensive, super good plan. So we're going to penalize you for looking out for the needs of your employees so you can track good employees. Can you believe this, ladies and gentlemen? Well, that's Obamacare. That's the so-called patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. They're not protecting you, and it's not affordable. It's more expensive, and most of you will end up with plans that are significantly less in quality and benefits than you have now. In other words, you were lied to. It was a big con. I don't have the clip, but I could play it. Obama telling people over and over and over again, we're going to get more people insured that are uninsured. And as a result, you'll be able to keep your plan that you have, keep the doctor you have, and it's going to cost you less money. I don't believe in Santa Claus or the Easter Bunny. Apparently, the Democratic Party on Obama does. To explain to me how you're going to get medical benefits for 30 million plus uninsured, and it's not going to cost the people that buy it, that can buy it, how their premiums are not going to go up. It's a con. It's a lie. It's a con. And that's why the popularity of Obamacare has gone down, down, and down. And more people, as they're seeing the details of what was in that bill, don't want any part of it. They want Obamacare repealed. And it will happen. Maybe not this year. Maybe not next year. I think it's going to require both the House and the Senate being controlled by the Republican Party as well as the White House. When that happens, then you will, I hope, because the Republican Party is just as capable as the Democratic Party to not fulfill its promises. Because that's exactly what's going on here with Obamacare. He's not meeting the promises. He's over-promised and under-delivered. And an objective evaluation of Obamacare, it's not ready. It needs to be delayed at least a year. It's simply not ready for prime time. Democrats know it and have said it, and so have Republicans. It was a bad idea whose time unfortunately came, and as a result, the reason why I'm so passionate about this, there is a big unintended consequences of Obamacare, or the so-called Affordable Care Act that is hardly affordable when you get a premium increase to just keep the level of benefits you have now. And that is exactly what you're going to be experiencing. And people who are experiencing, you're going to be hit with a big increase. And there's no secret why. How are you going to pay for the other people? That's what's going on. This is cost shifting. The people that don't qualify for subsidies are going to be paying for the people that are getting the subsidies. Some people are not going to pay a dime. That's what's going on. And who is the hardest hit? It's the young people. Why? It's the young people, typically from 18 to 29, who elect not to buy health insurance. Rationally elect not to buy health insurance. Why? They want to spend their money for something else. It could be a college education. It could be starting a business. It could be a new car, a new house. It could be a lot of things. And in America, at least up to until Obamacare was passed, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, until that was passed, which most people today shorten to Obamacare, until that was passed, every American, after he paid his taxes, could take the income and buy what he wants, whether it's a car, a home, or rent an apartment, or take a vacation, or go to college, or start a business. You earn the money, you decide how you spend it. Obamacare is unprecedented, it's unique, and it's a disaster, because now the federal government is saying, if you don't have a health insurance plan through your employer, then you are required, you are mandated. We're going to force you to buy an individual plan on the so-called exchanges. And that starts 1 October, it starts, the exchange is open, and you have to 1 January to get your individual plan. And there's going to be sticker shock. Now, some of you are going to say, could care less because I'm going to qualify for a subsidy. Oh, you are? How long do you think this subsidy is going to last? I tell you, not very long. Not when we're running these massive deficits. You see, the last thing, ladies and gentlemen, you do in a situation that is confronting the United States is add another entitlement program. And that's exactly what Obamacare is. It's a new entitlement program that's going to add billions to the billions to the deficits every year. And it's going to add billions and billions over trillions of dollars to the national debt. The absolutely wrong policy. When your back is up to the wall, you can't pay your bills. The last thing you do is go out and increase your spending and take on more debt. It's common sense. It's that simple. It's common sense. But we have a Congress, both the House, the Senate, and the President, that have lost their minds. See, they have a severe, and I think a terminal case, of spending addiction disorder. They can't balance the budget to save their lives. There's not the will, there's not the vision, there's not the courage, and there's not the determination to get anywhere close to balancing the budget. Somewhere between 30% and 40% of the total budget today needs to be financed. In other words, we need to issue debt to pay the government bills. And all the Federal Reserve has been doing, massively doing, with its quantitative easing 1, 2, and 3, is buying the debt. That's what they're doing. And exchanging IOUs, Federal Reserve notes, that enable the United States government to pay its bills. And when you and I get that money, we put it in the bank, and then the bank uses it as part of its reserves. Where do you get screwed? You get screwed in the fact you're going to see inflation come roaring back. And that purchasing power of your dollar is going to go down, down, and down. The word they use, I don't particularly like it, but I haven't come up with a better one. This is unsustainable. No kidding. It is unsustainable. The way to think of it is like you earn, let's say, $3,000 a month. You earn $36,000. Not a lot. Better than some. And you spend, let's say, $3,000 a month. You spend $5,000 a month. And you do this year in, year out. And all you do is get more and more and more credit card. What ultimately happens? The banks are not stupid. They eventually say, I'm sorry, we're not going to increase your credit. And you can't find any bank that's going to give you another one. And at that point, it stops. The jig is up. The banks have said, enough is enough. You can't continue doing this. You can't increase your credit card debt up, up, and up because you don't earn enough money. You're a bad credit risk. You're never going to pay. You can't even make the minimum payments. It's gone up, up, and up. You're going to default on it. That's what happens. People just don't pay their credit card. And what happens? The banks write it off. And who pays for it? You and me, if you have a credit card. I don't have credit cards anymore. Stop. If I can't pay cash, I don't buy it. It's that simple. In other words, it's cash on no debts, no credit cards. That's my operation today. And I recommend that to everyone. And that's hard to do. But there's no way it could ever get me to get a... It's a racket, folks. They're sucking you in with those credit cards. And more people, what are they doing? If they don't have a job, they might have a job now, a good-paying job, then suddenly they're unemployed. And yes, they have some savings. So for several months or several years, guess what they do? They live on their savings. They might have to dip in their retirement funds. At some point, their savings are gone, because they have this massive credit card debt. They got to pay their mortgage or rent. Their retirement plan is gone. And then they're in a world of hurts. Then they'll take any job. And that's more and more Americans. That's millions of Americans. Some calling it living from paycheck to paycheck. It's actually worse. They have debts that they can't pay. They have no money coming in. They've gone through their savings. They've gone through their retirement funds. And now it sucks to be you, and there's no future. And that's happening to millions of people. Now, it's great if you're employed and have a good-paying job. Congratulations. And I urge you to do that by creating your own business and creating jobs. Most people don't want to do that because they want the security of working for a company. But really, your only security is take your future in hands and open up your own business. And I hope more and more Americans do that, because that's the only way we can turn this around. Because the job creators in the United States are simply your small business owners, your new small businesses. That's the over small, and to some extent mid-sized. It's not your major Fortune 500 company that employs 50, 60, or 100,000 people. Yeah, they employ a lot of people, and they're a big company with many entities or operations across the country, but they're not the net job creator. If you're looking for a job and you can't find it, look for small businesses, especially new business. That's my advice to young college students today. If you can't find a job, look for them. They're out there, but you're going to have to look. You're going to have to pound the pavement. You're going to have to knock on doors and then be very, very thankful if they hire you. And unfortunately today, most people that are hiring, and it's a booming business, are hiring part-timers. Why? Because the companies, whether small, medium, or large, don't know what their costs are going to be in terms of not only health insurance, but in terms of taxes. Because when you're getting this situation, the handwriting's on the wall. The way the Democratic Party wants to get out of this, and it doesn't work, is to increase the tax rates. We'll have the rich pay for it. You've heard that. They don't pay their fair share, which is a lie by any stretch of the imagination. The American people are overtaxed. Taxes need to be decreased. I haven't even gotten into the tax situation, and I will in other show. So I wanted to give you the big picture. and make sure you understand it. What the House did, the House of Representatives did last week, they said, we, the American people, want the federal government open, and we're going to keep the federal government open by passing a continuing resolution that pays for all of government except for Obamacare. I totally agree with it. The problem is the Senate is controlled by the Democrats. And I'm going to spend just about 2 minutes, and I know I'm going to confuse you, so I'm going to keep it real simple. There's two ways the Senate can go. One way, and it's the way Senator Cruz is forcing to go, is to say, if you want to get cloture, you're going to have to get 60 votes. That's one way. Or, and this is the way the Democrats would like to do it, they want a resolution on this. The Senate has to respond to the House resolution. So they can either do it with requiring 60 votes or 50. They'd rather go the 50, because then what is the Senate going to do? They're going to strip out that amendment, that section that defunds Obamacare. They're going to put it back in and send it back to the House with 50 or less than 60 votes, but somewhere between 50 and 60 votes. Remember, the Republicans have 46 seats. The Democrats, remember, some of these are socialists, but the people that would vote for the Democrats have 56. They're not all Democrats. Some are independents, some are socialists. But you got 56 potential votes for in essence, stripping out that section of the House resolution, putting back funding for Obamacare. And that's probably what's going to happen. Or you can go, what the Republicans could filibuster this, and the only way you can stop a filibuster is if you have 60 votes. So there are two ways to go. Ultimately, what's going to happen, a continuing resolution is going to be passed. The question is, where's the compromise? There needs to be compromise here. What I think is going to happen, they're going to delay Obamacare for a year. And I have mixed feelings about it. I know it's not ready, but I would love that to be implemented, and it's going to hurt people. That's why I sort of don't favor this. But to the extent it's not delayed, the American people are going to learn more and more about Obamacare, and they don't like it now. The majority of Americans want to repeal Obamacare. They want to defund Obamacare. And listen to this, over 50% would like to shut, no, like is the wrong word. If it takes shutting down the government to defund Obamacare, they're for it. That's the majority. John Boehner, the House Speaker, said it best. The American people do not want the federal government shut down. I don't want it shut down. What I want is a balanced budget. You need to continue the federal government operating. But what, and that's true, the majority of the American people do not want the government shut down. But the majority of people also want government spending to be cut. And the majority of people want Obamacare to be defunded and repealed and replaced with something better. So John Boehner was reflecting in his statements the will of the American people in terms of the majority of the American people. Now, Barack Obama is demagoguing this as he sets up straw man. But I remind you, Obamacare was sold to the American people as you will be able to keep your plan, you'll be able to keep your doctor, and it's going to cost you less. Lie, lie, lie. Will you trust this man? I don't trust him. He's an habitual liar. So he can smooth talk you and con you and mislead you, and he does. And I have clips of what he says, and I might get into it next show. But that's what's going on. So you need to have a clear understanding what happened last week. And ultimately, I'm not happy. Let's say we get a continuing resolution, and the big so-called compromise is we delay Obamacare for a year. And that would be good for the American people, both Democrats and Republicans, because Obamacare is not ready for prime time. And I don't think it's ever going to be ready for prime time, because Senator Reid has said, as well as other people, we don't want Obamacare to work. In other words, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, we don't want it to work. Why? We want single payer. That's what Obama wants, and that's what the Democratic Party wants. And see, when you have single payer, you're screwed. You don't have competition. If you don't like your plan, you have no place to go. That's why they want this, to make you dependent on the federal government. And when, in other words, they want to control you, make you dependent. And the way they make you dependent, like they did with Social Security and Medicare, if you're dependent on that, and that's the majority of the American people, guess what, folks? Those programs are unfunded to the tune of over $100 trillion. And to put that number in perspective, the GDP this year, real GDP, will be around somewhere in the $16 trillion range, you know, plus or minus. Depends on when the recession starts. I said $100 trillion. That's many, many times that. There is no way that Social Security and Medicare can be funded. There's not enough money. You'd have to increase the tax rates to 65-70% to fund that. That's not going to happen. The American people wouldn't stand for it. We're overtaxed now. But that's truly, if you truly want to fund Social Security and Medicare, you would have to have massive, multiple times what you're paying now in taxes. No politician would dare to do that because they wouldn't survive an election. But that's the dirty secret. In other words, over the last 80 years, under both Democrat and Republican administration, you've been lied to. They've been over-promising you. They play Santa Claus. They give you benefits. Unfortunately, they're not actuarially sound. In other words, they're unfunded, which means they can't pay them. In future years, the reason why Medicare is going bankrupt is they know they can't pay the bills. And what happens is more and more doctors won't take Medicare patients. That's the problem with Medicaid. Oh, yeah, you got, if you're poor or indigent and you qualify for Medicare, Medicaid, they say, well, you got Medicaid. Well, please stay healthy, because guess what? If you get sick or need an operation, good luck trying to find a doctor or surgeon that's going to take you. They won't take, most of them won't take you. You know why? If they take you, they lose money. The government doesn't pay. Well, they pay below cost. And remember, doctors only have so many hours in a day, a week, a month, or a year. They're going to take patients that can pay and pay what it costs them to do the procedures, not something less, which is the practice with Medicaid and will quickly become the practice with Medicare. So don't, you know, if you're in Medicare and you think you're in Fat City, no, you're not. And many people that have Medicare also have Medicare supplement, which you need, because Medicare only pays a portion of the bill. I'm looking at the time. I'm going to wrap it up. But that's my take on the budget battles begins. And this is the beginning, folks. And we're going to see a lot of rhetoric flying from both sides. But the message I'm saying, don't be distracted. They're not talking about a balanced budget. They're not near it. And sometime in mid-October, we'll learn what the deficit was for fiscal year 2013. As a minimum, it'll probably be $700 billion, upwards of $900 billion. And yes, that's better than being over $1 trillion, which is $1,000 billion. $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. So yes, we've had a gradual decline in the deficit, but year after year after year, these deficits require funding, more and more and more and more debt. That's why you're going to hear more about the need to raise the debt ceiling. They have no choice. They have to increase it. Because the only way to not increase the national debt ceiling is to balance the budget. And we're not even close. We're anywhere for just this year, fiscal year that's closing, somewhere between $700 billion and $900 billion deficit. We spent more than we've taken in all taxes. See, if we had a balanced budget, there wouldn't be a deficit. You see the problem? It is unsustainable. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at Richland College or the DCCD. I hope you enjoy today's somewhat entertaining but more informative show. And now, back to the music.